Well, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, you know what I'm going to be talking about today. We're going to continue our short series. It ends up being four sermons. One of them will be at the Feast of Trumpets. A series of sermons on prophecy. We like that topic. We enjoy knowing about what we might expect to see in the future. So we, again, often talk about that. We obviously need to know some basic things about what to expect. We don't want to be caught off guard. I think that's kind of one of the reasons we talk about Bible prophecy. What's going to happen? Where do you think this is leading? We're watching world events. We watch the news and say, well, wonder where this is going to take us in light of Bible prophecy. The Bible does contain prophecy. And one of the reasons it does, God has revealed certain things to us, is so that we won't be caught off guard. We won't be afraid. We won't be alarmed when certain things start happening. Rather, we understand, wait a minute, this is all part of God's plan. He's bringing this about for a reason, for a purpose. And he knows exactly what he's doing. It's not as if God has just completely turned his back on humanity and said, well, that's just it. They're done. I'm going to let mankind destroy themselves. Well, he won't. He will bring us up to the point where we're about to do that and then intervenes right at the last minute to keep us from doing that. But he tells us not to be afraid. There's a couple places we should look at. One in particular is Proverbs 3, verse 25. Proverbs 3 and verse 25. It says, don't be afraid of sudden terror. Well, that's our lives today. That's what we have all the time, is sudden terrorism. That's why they call it that. People are afraid. They don't know when, how, where it's going to strike. We just expect it. We know there are people whose mission it is to kill as many people as they can. They usually blow themselves up while they're doing that. Terrorism. It says, well, don't be afraid of that sudden terror, nor of the trouble from the wicked when it comes. Not if, but when. For the Lord will be your confidence. And I hope we understand that. I hope we count on that. We don't worry about these things. We don't sit up at night and say, oh, I wonder if I should go to the store. I wonder if I should do this. You know, I'm going to get blown up. Yeah. No, the Lord will be your confidence. He will keep your foot from being caught. We go about our lives. We trust God. We ask Him for protection. And we put our lives in His hands. He tells us also in Mark 13, take heed. See, I have told you all these things beforehand. So that's why prophecy. That was verse 23. I've told you all these things beforehand. We need to understand. Now, some of us, the old timers, you know, been in the church for years and years. Well, I've heard all this before. I heard prophecy sermons back in the 1960s saying how urgent the times are and how, you know, things are going to happen pretty soon. You know, after all, 1972 is coming quickly. And that was, I don't know how many years ago, 50 years ago. And here we are. And now some of the young people coming up, well, all I've ever heard all my life is this about things are going to happen, this is going to happen. Yeah, right. When? I mean, well, it is. We're that much closer to it. No, it didn't happen in the 1950s or the 60s or the 70s. And some of you young people are probably pretty glad it didn't. You know, you wouldn't be here. So I want us to understand these things. I want our youth, our young people who have never heard some of these things, to also listen to what's being said today so that you also have an understanding of Bible prophecy. This is not words I'm making up. This is not just something, well, this church believes that. It's coming from the Word of God. And you'll see these things, so you should understand them. That's our intent today. What does the Bible tell us about what's going to happen in the days, the years ahead of us? Now, in our last sermon, we reviewed about what we can expect to see happening in the church between now and the beginning of the Great Tribulation. You know, we talked about the church eras, how that relates to us, what we might expect to see happening in congregations. But this time, this week, we're going to see more of a focus on world events, that are going to happen in the months and the years that are ahead of us. Now, we covered some of this. If you were around a couple of years ago, I gave a sermon. You can still find it online. It's entitled Between Now and Then. Gave that about 2 years ago and covered some of these things. But we're going to cover in a little bit different way, a little bit different emphasis and focus this time, But it's really hard to give a sermon on prophecy because, you know, the prophecies aren't fulfilled yet and they didn't change. So it's the same one. So I'm sorry if I repeat myself a little bit. Well, that's just, that's the way it is. So we'll have to accept that. But let's start by looking at the prophecy about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Now, that's a phrase you've heard for a long time. People really, they make movies about it. They write books about it. People get rich about talking about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Oh, this is so scary and it's so wondrous, and I want to know, well, what is it really, and how can we understand? Let's read the account in Revelation 6. Be reminded what that means about the four horsemen. Well, we're going to see that the four horsemen are going to continue to ride, as it were. Now, this is symbolic, but there's not really four horsemen out there riding around on a horse somewhere. It's symbolic language. We know Revelation talks specifically in symbolic language. But we'll see the interpretation of the horsemen as we read along in Matthew 24. So we're going to kind of flip between Matthew 24 and Revelation 6. But we'll start in Revelation 6. Verse 1, I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder. Can you imagine what this must have been like for John to have this realistic vision from God? I think God has a way of making something very realistic. You know, we talk about 3D movies and surround sound and all that. Where's all that come from? I think God makes this possible. Can you imagine John having this vision, very realistic, and he wrote down in his words what he was seeing, what God was making clear to him. With a voice like thunder saying, come and see. And I looked, behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. Now the explanation is back in Matthew 24. So we go to verse 3. This is the disciples now coming to Christ privately and saying, you know, tell us. We want to know. You're not going to tell everybody else, but tell us. When will these things be? What is the sign of your coming? And Jesus answered, verse 4, and said to them, take heed. So there's action. We've got to do something. We can't take it casually. We have to be careful. Take heed that no one deceives you. Speaking right at them, those disciples, those would be the 12 apostles. Take heed that no one deceives you. And we can kind of take that for the church, that no one deceive us, down even to our age. Many will come in my name, saying, I'm the Christ, and will deceive many. And of course, that's happened. That happened certainly in the New Testament church, shortly after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, and on into the days of John, and into the 100 to 200 AD, the church was completely different. There was so much deception. And again, we're seeing that even more today. Now, as I say, and we'll see, these horsemen, they continue to intensify in the meanings of them. So if there was deception then, what about the deception that's in the future, even yet? What can we see? Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. But back to Revelation 6, verse 3, the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, come and see. You'll see that every time, that we're expected to understand. We have to come and we have to look at what's being revealed to us. So, and it's not hidden now. We're supposed to see it. Come and see. What is it? Well, verse 4, another horse, this one fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another. And there was given to him a great sword. So we see, you know, the opposite of peace is war and a lot of death. Well, how many people have been killed in wars throughout the ages? Millions upon millions. Matthew 6, again, the explanation, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Certainly we have. We've had that in our lifetime. We've had it, you know, they had it 1,000 AD, 500 AD. There's been war all along. But, you know, we're told, see that you're not troubled. We shouldn't be troubled when we hear of wars all the time. These things must come to pass. And even in our time, wars, rumors of wars, they must come to pass. But it's not yet. Just because we're having war, and we have had war, World War II, World War I, you know, and on through the conflicts that we've had, Korea, Vietnam, on into Iraq, and so on. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. Then on to the third seal, Revelation 6, verse 5. The third seal, I heard the living creature again say, come and see. And so I looked, and behold, this was a black horse. And he who sat on had a pair of scales in his hands. I think you've seen a depiction of that, what that looks like. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius. So a little bit of wheat for a monetary value. I looked this up once to see what the monetary value of denarius was, but it's not a whole lot. Three quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not harm the oil and the wine. So these things become precious. And in a time of famine, you know, they're going to be very careful not to spoil any oil or wine and store up what grain they can. Again, that's the interpretation in Matthew 24. Simply goes on to say there will be famine. Well, we have famine now. We'll look at that again in a minute, though. But let's finish up the fourth seal, chapter 6 and verse 7. He opened the fourth seal. I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, come and see. And so I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death. And Hades, or the grave, follows after him. Power was given to them over a fourth of the earth. That's a lot of territory. That's a lot of people. To kill with sword, hunger, death, and by beasts of the earth. And that final explanation mentions in Matthew 24, verse 7, it mentions pestilence. So with famine and war, there's disease. You know, widespread disease epidemics. It also mentions earthquakes in various places. And it says all these are the beginning of sorrow. It's like we're going to have these through the years. Always look for these things happening. And if we go back and look at history, we'll see all of these things have been happening. Well, they're going to intensify. Once a seal is open, it remains open. Each seal is added to the seals previously opened and begin to take their toll, and they greatly intensify as we near the end of the last days. Now, we've certainly seen all these things happening. If you look back over the past 20 years or so and think, well, what have we seen? What's been in our news? Well, we've seen a lot of these things. But so much, that's my point, so many of these things have been happening, wars and famine and disease epidemics, so much so to the extent that we simply think, well, that's just the way it is. That's normal. You know, I read the headlines, I'll go online, however I get my news, and I'm seeing these things, and it's kind of casual. We don't get upset about hearing these things and seeing these things. Well, you know, we had another earthquake. 1,000 people died. Okay? And we just go on. And we don't get shocked by statistics of things that happen, of people dying of hunger. It's just normal. But people are suffering all around the world. Someday it's coming closer to us. Satan the devil is hard at work in his attempts to destroy humanity, to completely destroy humanity and turn any human beings completely away from God and his way of life. So we can expect these things, as I said, prophesied to get worse. Political and economic events are, I believe, shaping up to what they call the proverbial perfect storm. You hear some news commentators and analysts talking about the perfect storm that's coming. And certainly that includes right here in our own country. Well, I want to go briefly through some of these in a little bit more detail, just to see what might specifically we could expect to see happening. Going back to religious deception. Again, in Matthew 24, we read, many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And the parallel in Luke 21, take heed that you not be deceived, because many will come in my name, saying, I am he. So those are prophesied. Those are end-time prophecies that we can expect to see more deception. We think, well, I've seen it, and everything's stable now. There's no more deception. We've been through all of that. I'm not so sure that we are finished with that. In fact, I think we can expect considerable more. That's why we keep talking all the time of the need to be rooted and grounded in the truth. You know, we know the fundamental beliefs. Why does Mr. Franks keep talking about the fundamental beliefs all the time? You know, I think there's a reason for that. I think he understands what's coming, and he's trying to tell all of us, you better know what you believe and why you believe it and who taught you. You know, so we have to understand these things. Sticking to the trunk of the tree issues, not out on twigs and branches, because those are easy to fall from. We better cling with our arms around the trunk of the tree. Now, why? Well, there has been division in the church. You know, that's just a fact. It has been. So there's been religious confusion in the world as well. What's going to continue? I think that is. I think we can expect to see it in the church also. And in the church, probably in years to come, people may be a bit confused. I'm not sure now. I see this, I see that, and it's just kind of confusing about where God's working. How is God working? Is this the right place? Maybe I should be someplace else. What's going on over there? And people begin to worry and get confused and say, if only I could, see a sign? If only I had something obvious to me that a miracle would happen. And people start thinking about that type of thing. Dramatic healings, maybe God's working there. If that becomes our mindset, that's what we're looking for, that can make us susceptible to only looking for some kind of dramatic special miracles. And people might be deceived by that. You know, could people be deceived by something that God might allow to happen, testing His people? You know, remember, we're supposed to know what we believe. You know, the trunk of the tree issues and so on, and looking for the fruit of God's Holy Spirit. So asking the question, is the devil capable of counterfeiting the truth and the gifts of the Spirit of God? Can Satan counterfeit those things, make it look good? Well, we know the answer to that, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14. Satan is not going to come with his deception in an obvious way to us. Okay? That doesn't make sense. That something happens, something is taught, or some miracle happens, and we can look and say, well, look, look at this being. He's got a red suit on, he's got a pitchfork, he's got a tail and horns. That's not the way it's going to work. You know, it's going to appear to be something good. Oh, wow, that's impressive. That looks interesting. Because, remember, no wonder it says, Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. It looks like, wow, this is the truth. Look at this brightness, this light I'm taking away from the darkness. Couldn't get Satan, because Satan's of the darkness. So this must be good. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. We have to be careful, is what this is saying. Satan always makes evil look good. He counterfeits it. He deceives that way. People think they're doing the right thing. That's deception. But they're being taught something different. The fruit of God's Spirit is really not there. We read this following scripture a lot in 2 Thessalonians 2. I think in the context of what we're talking about, it's time to look at it yet again. We cannot forget or dismiss this warning. There is a prophecy here of an incredible time of religious deception yet to come upon this world. And I think the Church of God will be a target of that. Who is Satan trying to destroy? All of mankind. Who is in particular does he hate? Trying to destroy those who would replace, you know, would take him and judge him, if you will. Members of the Church of God who will be saints and who will, you know, we know what's coming with the Day of Atonement. And he does not want that to happen. So his deception will be very shrewd and cunning and aimed at God's people, I believe. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, do not let anyone deceive you by any means. Several means will be tried, I believe. For that day, capital D, the coming of the Jesus Christ, will not come unless a falling away comes first. Well, has a falling away happened? We can argue that all day. Well, I would agree, yes, a falling away certainly happened if you look back at the history of the church over the past 50 years. Will something else yet happen? I don't know. You don't know either. Possibly, because in the context, it's going to happen around the time that the man of sin is revealed. Or is this maybe just saying one thing will happen and later another thing will happen? But regardless, we know that a time is coming when a man of sin will be revealed, that son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. So we can look for this to happen. Okay, I think we understand who this is talking about and where it's going to happen. And we will see an individual who sets himself up as an object of worship. He will sit in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And then the warning, don't you remember that when I was with you, I told you these things? So we can expect to see that happen. When that happens, we can't say, well, I didn't think that was going to happen. No, I'm going to remind you of what day this is, you know, September the 10th of 16. I told you these things were happening. It's been in your Bible all along, and you've read it and you've heard it, and you know these things are coming. You can't be taken off guard. Verse 9, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan. So obviously that's who's behind all this. And it won't come just in a corner or secretly or nobody knows what's going on or it's just so vague, I can't figure it out. No, he will do it with all power, signs, and lying wonders. And we're going to say, I've never seen anything like that before. Wow, how do you explain it? And you'll say, I can't. Well, don't you think that's of God? Isn't that God working? He says he's God. Don't you think it is? Look what he's done. Look what he's able to do. Peace is coming. We'll get to all that in a minute. It's going to be hard to deny that. It's going to look bright. Remember, he's an angel of light. But it's Satan the devil with all unrighteous deception among those who perish. Because, why are they perishing? This is directed to us. They did not receive the love of the truth. Well, we've got the truth. We better love it. The other people out there, they don't have the truth that we have to love it in the first place. So we have it. We better learn to love the truth that they might be saved from these things. And this for this reason, God will send them strong delusion. Strong delusion. Because they took it for granted. Oh, I've heard these things all my life. I don't need to study that. I know these things. They take it for granted. God sends them strong delusion. They will believe the lie. There's a similar warning that sometimes we don't take a look at. It's in Revelation 13, verse 13. Speaking of this same power, and of course we know the power behind it. Revelation 13, verse 13, he performs great signs. He even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. You know, we think, well, that's kind of the standard miracle. We call fire down from heaven. You know, Elijah, think of that time. But I think he'll be able to do things even greater than this. It says he performs great signs. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs. The signs are going to be deceptive. They are going to be so powerful, so strong, so convincing that the people seeing these things are going to say, this must be God. Again, because that person is going to proclaim that he is. Well, we need to think, well, have we seen him come down? Was there a resurrection of the dead? Did the seventh trumpet blow? Has all these things happened? No. So we know that's not God. It says that he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Again, we know who gives the beast his power. We've not experienced that kind of deception before. Again, I don't think there's any doubt that this will not appear evil. This is going to appear very good, something wonderful. The people of the world are probably thinking, well, it's about time. About time. This is God. He's finally showing himself. We thought God was hiding. We thought God had turned his back on humanity and allowing all these terrible things to happen. Well, now, finally, he's giving power to this great religious authority. And look what they're able to do. He's solving all the problems of the world. We're going to have peace in our time. We've got to see it for what it really is. Not get caught up in it. We're told, do not be soon shaken or troubled by these events. We're told to expect them and be prepared for them because they are coming. I know we've talked about it for a long time, haven't we? We're that much closer. We're going to see more war as well as we get into the next category. Doesn't need much information for me to tell you war is here to stay until Christ comes back. For us, the most important place to watch, of course, is the Middle East. We've been told that for decades, to the point that we have become so accustomed to hearing about war in the Middle East, conflict in the Middle East, war, terrorist attacks in Syria, Turkey, Yemen, Iraq. Again, we don't even react to it. We don't give it a second thought when we hear about these things. You know, what's going on with Syria and Turkey and Russia and you know, is there really a peace agreement that was worked out yesterday? How long will that last? I don't know, tomorrow? I don't know. We don't put stock in that. But we were just so used to that. It's become so commonplace to hear about it all the time. But the Middle East is a tinderbox. It is ready to explode. And something's going to ignite. And it will explode. War is not only being fought in the Middle East. I looked up a couple of weeks ago when I prepared this. It said there were currently 67 countries involved in war right now. 67. This is Satan's world. Satan is all about conflict and war. Satan is attempting to destroy humanity. Again, this is something we're going to talk about on the Day of Atonement, but how much Satan is trying to destroy humanity. He is our enemy, and he would destroy all human life, and we're headed that way unless God intervenes. We know he will at the last minute. And famine. Once again, this is something we hear about only, you know, in the distance. It's kind of far off. We hear about famine in places like South Sudan or Somalia, and we don't even know where they are. And we think about, well, North Korea. And we just, North Korea, they're bringing it upon themselves, you know. They got this corrupt leader. All he wants to do is shoot off ballistic missiles and develop nuclear weapons. And so he starves his people. Well, too bad for them. And then we go on. And we don't realize how people are suffering. You know, I looked up the two top countries in the world of famine, the highest level of famine and hunger. We wouldn't know where they are, except this one kind of tells us, Central African Republic. It's not North Africa, it's not South Africa, it's somewhere in the middle, Central Africa. And there's a country there called Central African Republic. And Chad. Well, I think of Chad, I think of my son-in-law. You know, we don't know where the country of Chad is. Maybe some of you do, might pick it out on the map, somewhere in Africa. But again, people have been living for that, and it's so far away, we don't know anyone there. We're not concerned about it. It doesn't enter our minds. But it is widespread. Famine is widespread. People are hungry around the world. The statistic I said that showed, or I found, is that people who are hungry, or people who are considered undernourished, 800 million. You think how many that is? Go to bed hungry at night. Or undernourished, malnourished, aren't getting the right type of a diet. Hunger is a global problem. Malnutrition, hunger, it says to be the number one risk to health worldwide. But again, we don't think much about it here. You know, you go to the stores, you know, Walmart, Food Lion, Harris Teeter, you know, they're full. Yeah, maybe it costs a little more than what it used to, but they've been stable for a while. We don't have any problem getting groceries. Farmers, you know, we got a lot of corn, and we don't worry about it. What would it take for all that to go away? Talk to a trucker sometime. If we lost our infrastructure, something happened to the power grid, something happened to the computer systems, you know, we'd be pretty hungry in a couple weeks' time, and chaos would break out. I don't know how that will happen, but we are prophesied to have a great deal of famine. Ezekiel 5, verse 11, is a prophecy of what's eventually going to happen to this country before the return of Jesus Christ. Probably this will be taking place during the Great Tribulation. But again, the horseman shows that up until this, things were going to get worse and worse. So we can't expect to see increase in famines even in our nation. But Ezekiel 5 verse 11, therefore as I live, says the Lord God, surely because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your detestable things and with all your abominations, I will also diminish you, and my eye will not spare, and I will not have pity. You know, we think about, well, wow, what kind of a God is that? Doesn't God really have pity? Doesn't he really care? We know the answer to that. Of course he does. But we are bringing some of this on ourselves. And it said why? Because we've defiled his sanctuary and filled it with abominations. We won't obey God. We won't listen to God. But we know that God will wake these people up in an instant for them. In a moment, they will be awake again, alive again. And then they'll know, they'll understand. They'll be taught, and they'll be willing to listen. One third of you will die in the pestilence and be consumed with famine in your midst. One third fall by the sword all around you. And I will scatter yet another third to all the winds and draw out a sword after them. That is the culmination of the four horsemen. And this prophecy directed primarily toward the descendants of Israel, the 12 tribes. And that would be primarily the United States and Great Britain. So we can expect to see disease epidemics. We won't take much time on this. Our headlines are filled with headlines about disease epidemics. We hear about drug-resistant antibiotics, because you get a sniffle, you take an antibiotic. And so now we have drug-resistant antibiotics. We've been hearing about the spread of Zika. If you live in Florida, that's a concern for you right now. Are they spraying for these mosquitoes or carrying the Zika virus? What's going to happen? Is it going to come up here? Maybe it is. The point is, infectious and fatal diseases can appear and they can spread in a very short time. They make horror movies about this. You've seen them, these movies, Outbreak or The Plague or whatever they call them. These people dress up in these white outfits with the mask over and the respirators come in and they're giving shots to people, try to make them comfortable, and then they shake their head, there's nothing they can do, and then they blow up the town, because they can't let the virus spread. And so people make movies out of that. These things are coming. That's what it says is going to happen. One third. Deuteronomy 28, blessings and cursings, if you will not, verse 58. If you do not carefully observe all the words of the law that are written in this book, that you may fear the glorious and awesome name of the Lord your God, then, verse 59, the Lord will bring upon you and all your descendants extraordinary plagues, great prolonged plagues, serious prolonged sicknesses. Moreover, he will bring back on you the diseases of Egypt of which you were afraid, and they will cling to you. And every sickness and every plague that's not written in this book, the Lord will also bring upon you until you are destroyed. So it's coming. We can expect this to continue. Now, are we afraid of that? Do we say, oh no, I better get my flu shot this year? No, we take common sense precautions, okay? We practice good hygiene, we wash our hands, but we ask God for His protection, don't we? We count on God. We ask, please keep me safe from this. He said, keep your foot from being caught. And if we get sick, whatever reason, what do we do when we're sick? We're anointed. We ask God for His healing. So we count on those things. We don't have to sit back and worry, oh, I'm going to get sick from some of these plagues. But they are coming. Earthquakes, of course. We've seen a lot recently. We had this terrible earthquake in Italy a couple of weeks ago. I gave this sermon in Raleigh last week, and on the morning, last Sabbath morning, there was a 5.6 earthquake in Oklahoma, Missouri. Didn't cause very much damage, but still the point is they're going to come. We can expect to see that. As we get in more to the Great Tribulation, the Day of the Lord, there are a great deal of earthquakes yet to happen. So we can expect that in the future. Let's go to another aspect that's completely different now from the horsemen and so on. And still what we can expect to see as prophecy unfolds in the next 2 or 3 to 10, 15 years. Rise of the foreigner among us. That's in Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28. Now, I want to begin discussing this by stating that this country was built on immigration. I think if I asked for a show of hands, how many of your parents or grandparents are immigrants, a great deal would raise their hand. We obviously embrace and welcome people from other nations and other cultures. That's what makes our country great. They enrich our lives tremendously. And that's a good and right thing. But with people coming now into a country, any country, there's a right way, there's a wrong way. Uncontrolled, illegal immigration can be crushing and can be detrimental to a country, to a society, especially when there is no attempt whatsoever at assimilation. And this is predicted in Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43. Deuteronomy 20, I just have the one sentence here. It says, the alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. And again, I think we can see the trend and things like that happening in our society today. There's another scripture that points this out, and that's in Lamentations. Now, we don't often go to the book of Lamentations in a sermon. I once did an entire sermon about the book of Lamentations. That's been some years ago. Chapter 5, verse 1. I'm not giving you time to turn there because I don't have 10 extra minutes. It says, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Look, behold, our reproach. Our inheritance has been turned over to aliens and our houses to foreigners. So again, we can expect to see that happen. You know, there's so much talk about that these days, so much so that illegal immigration, how to control it, it's become something of a joke in our country. You know, ridicule and just way too political. Our borders are not secure, and it doesn't really seem that there is any intention to make them so, despite what some politicians will promise. So I think we can expect, according to prophecy, a continued rise of uncontrolled and illegal immigration in this country, and perhaps some other countries as well. Now, there's something else that we should be looking for. We are seeing it. We have seen it more in the past couple of years. We were kind of surprised by it, but here it is. Look for the Arab Confederation to increase and the structure of the caliphate to be established. In a sense, it has been. They call it by the name the caliphate already. ISIS believes that it must establish a caliphate or a group, a union of nations or peoples that fully enforces its, that is ISIS, interpretation of Islamic or Sharia law. Okay, they want their version, and that's why they're willing even to kill other Muslims, is because they're not going to, you know, adopt their way of Sharia law. So again, that's what puts ISIS in conflict with the present government ruling Islamic countries, the lack of enforcement of strict Islamic law. Here's what ISIS' vision is. It says, quote, that the armies of Rome will mass to meet the armies of Islam in northern Syria. You wonder why northern Syria is a flashpoint today? That's why they are there. That's why they are. There's so much conflict centered around northern Syria. And that Islam's final showdown with an anti-Messiah, I wonder who that could be, will occur in Jerusalem after a period of renewed Islamic conquest. So again, ISIS believes it's preparing the region for this, what must come about, this apocalyptic bloodbath, so that the Mahdi, the 12th Mahdi, will come out of hiding and establish himself as the great God and push down this anti-Messiah that's coming in Jerusalem, and the whole world now comes under Muhammad, he appears, and all this stuff, and everything's wonderful. That's what they think. Why is that significant to us? Why do we care what they think? Well, prophecy in Psalm 83, again, we've heard this before. We know what a confederation of Arab nations is prophesied to do. This is, shows where they will come together. Psalm 83, verse 4, they say, they being the Arab, this Arab confederation, come, let us cut them off from being a nation. I wonder who that might be. Who do they want to cut off from being a nation? You think they like their next door neighbor, Israel, very well? You think they like any of the Western world? We want to cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. It gives you a clue who they hate. For they have consulted together with one consent. Something brings them together. One ideology brings them together. They form a confederacy against you. And then it mentions Edom, Ishmaelites, Moab, Ammon, Amalek, and so on. Those are Arab ancestry names, the descendants of which have become these Arab nations today. I quoted this before. I want to read it again from Life, Hope, and Truth about this. It says, as we come to the time of the end, spoken of in Daniel 11, verse 40, something is going to bring the Arab world together as a confederacy against Israel, or allow a powerful Arab nation, one nation, to emerge in order to fulfill the prophecy. Again, we have a prophecy about the king of the south. The king of the south has to have power. Where's that power going to come from? One person, probably one nation, not going to do it, but a union of nations will attempt to do that, think that they can. Fighting against the king of the north. Perhaps this clash between the two powers will occur over the treatment of Muslims. Perhaps it will be a clash over oil. Perhaps some economic disagreement. The Bible doesn't give us the reason or reasons for the fighting, or provide a specific identity of exactly who the king of the south is. But the ancient nations of Edom, Moab, and Egypt are particularly mentioned in the prophecy. Now, it goes on to say that the king of the north likely will be a revival of the Roman Empire. Again, you can go through that in Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Revelation 17, the fourth kingdom. But the king of the north will successfully counterattack the king of the south. Now, we'll get to this in future sermons, but this is what we can look for. We can see that this attack, this push, is going to happen, indicating that in the process, the king of the north then will enter the glorious land. That's identified, of course, as the Holy Land, the Middle East. He will gain power or control or have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. That's the end of the quote. So again, at some point in the future, we can expect to see this confederacy, this union of Arab countries or peoples uniting to initiate a major strike on likely Israel and on up into Europe, causing a swift and an overwhelming response to that. They're not going to stand by and take that lightly. It's going to be, all right, that's the last straw. Enough is enough, because we've seen pushes before. We've seen terrorist attacks taking place before, particularly in France, we think of. But something's going to happen. This is it. And again, this was likely to be met with quite a bit of approval in the Western world, because the Western world would think, oh, it's about time. It's about time someone's dealing with this threat that's been, you know, a plague on the earth for all these past couple of decades now, or however long it will be. Finally, something's taken care of it. Well, we have to be aware and know what is really happening. Related to this is what we just mentioned. Continue to look for signs of unification in Europe. Chapter 13, Revelation 13. Look for signs of unification in Europe. I know sometimes we say, well, how can this be? It seems like Europe is so weak, it's falling apart. There was a lot of talk about when Brexit happened, you know, people, well, is this it? Is this the start of something happening? Well, perhaps it is. We'll see. But this is prophesied to happen. Revelation 13:1. I stood on the sand of the sea, and it's this vision. I saw this beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads, 10 horns. On his horns, 10 crowns. And on his head, a blasphemous name. Now the interpretation over in chapter 17, verse 12. These 10 horns that you saw, again, so here's, he's seen this beast with these horns. What is that? They're 10 kings who have received no kingdom as of yet. This is the final resurrection of the Roman Empire that's not come together yet, but it will. But they will receive authority for 1 hour. So a very short time is 1 hour. I don't think it's just 1 hour, 60 minutes, but it means a short time as kings with this beast. Okay, this one person leading it, leading 10 kings, 10 crowns. They are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. They will relinquish their authority, their power, to this one individual, this dictator person, the beast power. Again, the Roman Empire overrun in AD 476. There were to be 10 horns, 10 restorations of the empire. Italy, the most recent, 1870 to 1945. There have been 9 revivals, 1 is to come. Daniel 2. Here's a description of the last revival of the Roman Empire, the fourth kingdom. Daniel 2, look at in verse 40. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, the kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Look at the power that's here. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom will be divided. And that's what we can expect to see. Well, we see a division in Europe today, Eastern and Western, the nations, that it's divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong, yet partly fragile. And as you saw iron mixed with clay, they will mingle with the seed of men. They will not adhere to one another. They'll be, well, it's like I'm trying to be together. I'm trying to work together. But it's like they can't really form the strength. Like iron doesn't mix with clay. But they do are strong enough to do some work for a while and to establish themselves for a while, although it seems to be difficult for them to do it. But it comes to an end. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. I read that sentence to show the time setting. This is the end time. That's the final union of nations. The 10 toes, the 10 nations. Again, it appears continued economic and political pressures will still make it imperative that these nations seek unity. Something's going to happen that we need to be together in order for the common good, for us to survive. We must be together. And perhaps the final event that compels this unity to finally take place and finally come together could be a response to a major attack from the king of the south. And that's something we will see, but I suspect something like that will happen. All right, we should also continue to expect to see weapons of mass destruction prevalent and terrorism increases. Much as we hate to say that, that is likely in the future. Ezekiel chapter 12 and verse 19. Ezekiel 12 and verse 19. Say to the people of the land, thus says the Lord God to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the land of Israel. Again, who's this speaking to? When it speaks to Israel and Jerusalem in prophecy, it's speaking primarily to us. You know, let my name be named on them, on the lads, you know, Jacob, and on down to Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. Thus says the Lord God, the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the land of Israel, they shall eat their bread with anxiety and drink their water with dread. You know, if we ever have a time like that, you want to have a meal, you want something to eat, but then you're always looking over your shoulder. I'm not sure. You know, what's going on? Are we safe? And that becomes the environment they're living in. And eventually, it says, so that her land may be emptied of all who are in it because of the violence of all those who dwell in it. Imagine a time of that. What could lead to so much violence in the country? Well, what kind of instability? Economic instability? Again, power grid instability? Then the cities that are inhabited shall be laid waste. What causes that? The land shall become desolate. You will know that I am the Lord. Again, God does this for a purpose. He's not hating people. He wants people to know, who is God? Why is he allowing this? What's he doing? What's his plan? Jeremiah 15, verse 7. Jeremiah 15, verse 7. Again, a future prophecy of what's going to happen to the people of this country. I will winnow them with a winnowing fan in the gates of the land, and I will bereave them of children. I will destroy my people since they don't return from their ways. Widows will be increased to me more than the sand of the sea. A lot of soldiers dying. I will bring against them, against the mother of the young men, a plunderer at noonday, out in broad daylight, wide open. And I will cause anguish and terror to fall upon them suddenly. Again, an increase in terrorism. We know that the potential of such scenarios is all around us. Again, this is the things that they make horror movies about and thriller movies. And Brad Thor sells a lot of books writing about things like this and other authors. News stories about terrorist groups trying to get their hands on nuclear material. If they could only make a dirty bomb, if they could only set it off in Times Square, then I'll show, then what will happen? Fear of a biological, chemical weapons coming to America. So far, it seems the hand of God has stopped all that. You know, what goes on behind the scenes that we know nothing about? It only takes one. We can expect to see continued lone wolf attacks that are continuing to strike fear and panic into the population. You know, and again, why is this happening? You know, we're bringing it upon ourselves as a nation, aren't we? Look at our nation. Look at the depravity of our nation. God completely out of the picture. We wonder where God is. We've thrown him out. So expect dramatic terrorist attacks to continue anywhere in the world, even in our own country. Here's something that if you've been in the church for a long time, you heard back in the 50s, the 60s, and it seemed strange back then. Mr. Armstrong would say, look for the pride of the power of the United States to disappear. They've broken the pride of our power, he would say. That comes from Leviticus 26 and verse 18. It says, after all this, if you will not obey me, I will break the pride of your power. We used to have that. Those in the congregation who are my age or older, remember a time when the United States was at the pinnacle of its post-World War II glory days. We can think back of what life was like back in the late 50s. I was born right around the time of that, right? 54. And going into first grade in 1960. And wow, the United States was on top of the world. We were the greatest nation militarily, headed to be the greatest financial nation in the next couple of decades. Again, the time came when the United States was the greatest nation on earth, and all the nations knew it and respected it, at least to a degree. Seems like things began to change. The early 1960s, we have the Vietnam War, we have the assassination of JFK. and the riots and things of the 60s, and we thought, wow, the country is, this is it. We're you know, the end is near. Those of us growing up in the 60s thought that was it, because after all, 1972 was supposed to be the year. But things changed. We recovered to some degree in the 1980s and 90s, and then, out of nowhere, 9/11. Tomorrow being the anniversary of that, 15 years ago, tangled up in seemingly endless conflict ever since. When will it ever stop? But American prestige and power has been on the decline ever since. Particularly the last 10 years have been humiliating in the opinion of some people. America is seen as a paper tiger who will not stand by her allies, does not live up to promises. We don't want to get involved anymore, and we won't come to their aid. Commitments are not honored. Alliances are betrayed, and weakness is not only perceived, it is seen, and it is noticed. Our country today. Another aspect, the United States and other Western nations continue a moral decline into perversity. What an understatement today. We cannot believe things that are going on today are considered normal, would not even have been spoken of 50 years ago. We would have run in shame to even think of the things that are going on today. Back in Leave It to Beaver time, there were standards of behavior and decorum that were held to, respected. And when they were not, when that was broken, there was embarrassment and shame. And young girls knew how to blush. Today that's unheard of. There is no right or wrong, unless you disagree with that statement, then you're bigoted. There is only, do whatever you want to do. Nothing matters. Whatever. Today we have prime time television shows that promote nudity. You've got shows that's the name of them. Dating Naked. You know, I'm naked and afraid. You know, out in the woods with no clothes. What is that? And they blur it out like we don't know. Almost every TV episode series is going to have homosexuality in it, portrayed as completely normal. If you don't like it, you're intolerant. You're narrow-minded. We're in disbelief today of our president demanding the schools promote and encourage the bathroom of your choice. The bathroom of your gender. A retail store that allows anyone to use any restroom it wants. I don't care. We should be reminded of what it will be like in the last days. Perilous times will come. And you can read through the list. This is the mind of Satan the devil. This is corruption. This is depravity. Satan the devil is all about selfishness and pride and evil. He is about the destruction of the family. That's why we're seeing these things. He hates the family and everything that the family stands for. But the family is the backbone of any successful society. You destroy the family, you destroy the society. So expect moral depravity to continue to sink even lower. Well, we have to be aware, we can't let it affect us. We can't get caught up in that. We can't say, oh, that's fine, no problem. Do whatever you want. No, you don't. There is wrong and there is right. And we should know the difference. We should look for indications of the coming mark of the beast. Revelation 13. We read this before, but we'll read it again and then read further in context. Revelation 13, verse 13. This beast power that's coming performs great signs. He'll even make fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. So they see that. Obviously, he's working miracles. He must be of God. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by the signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth, make an image to this beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And you remember that story, the deadly wound that was healed. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So death is coming, martyrdom is coming to those who will not fall down and worship this beast, or the image of the beast. We understand what this image is. So he causes all, not a few, not some, but he causes everyone, and then he goes on and describes, what do I mean by everyone? Well, everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave. He causes them to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead, so that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, people wonder, what is it? They all have all kinds of ideas about what this could be. Well, I don't have every answer, but I have what I think are some answers for you. I read this 2 years ago when I gave this sermon. It was from a July 5th, 2014 AP article. And it had something to do with the Pope. And he didn't like the fact that people were, Sunday was just another day of the week, and people were not worshiping. I was hearing a sermon just the other day, I think it was last night, talking about, I know who it was, Mr. Servideo was talking about when he grew up as a Catholic, when you didn't go to church on Sunday, well, that was a mortal sin. You know, you had to go to church, or if you didn't go, you had to go and confess why you didn't go. You had to go, there was a certain time. If you passed a certain time, well, you've been here long enough to be in church, counted, okay, now you can get up and leave. But the point being that this enforcement of this, I mean, if it was considered a mortal sin not to go to church on Sunday, well, what did the Catholic Church think about it now? Well, this was written, again, 2 years ago. Quote, Pope Francis has lamented the abandoning of the traditional Christian practice of not working on Sunday, saying this has a negative impact on families and friendships. While he said poor people need jobs to have the dignity, he indicated that opening stores and other businesses on Sunday as a way to create jobs, well, that's not beneficial for society. End of the quote. So that's what he thinks about it. I looked for something more recent, but I couldn't find it. We'll also read from Life, Hope, and Truth on their article about the mark of the beast. To try to, you know, what is that? Again, people think, well, you know, is it this symbol at the grocery store? Is it something, a chip that's going to be implanted? What is it? Well, here's what we write. The right hand can represent our actions. Again, the mark was to be in the hand or the forehead. The right hand can represent our action, our work, and labor. The forehead can symbolize the inner beliefs, the intellect, what's in the mind. So the mark of the beast is thus related to what we believe in our mind and what we do with our hands. Comparing this with Deuteronomy 6:8, where God commanded Israel to bind the commandments as a sign on your hand and frontlets between your eyes, again, your hand and the forehead, there is one commandment of God that's often closely related to one's ability to do business and that identifies God's people. And of course, it says that God's Ten Commandments, the Sabbath command, is one most likely to affect one's ability to work, to earn a living, and to do business. So that's where we think there's some connection with being enforcement of don't keep the Sabbath, but worship on Sunday instead. Receiving the mark of the beast shows I'm willing to compromise. I don't want to be labeled as different or rebellious against some, well, this powerful government is telling me I have to do this, and if I can't, I can't earn a living, I can't buy and sell, I can't do, you know, God wouldn't want that, so I guess I have to do what they're telling me if I'm going to survive through this time ahead. You know, I've got to take care of business. You know, if we're willing to compromise, we'll be marked with this mark. We saw in our last sermon, didn't we, when we talked about what was prophesied to happen in the church, a spirit of compromise is predicted to even be in the church of God community in the future. So look for more pressure as we go into this time to compromise God's law. Why we talk about this so often, that to be sure of what we know, to be confident in that, so that nothing will take it away from us and we won't be tempted to compromise with God's law. We'll know what to expect. All right, moving on. Economic collapse likely to come. Economic collapse. The United States is working on a $20 trillion debt. If you look at that debt clock, you know, it moves so fast. It's like $19.5 trillion right now. That is not sustainable. So for our young people, I want to try and illustrate what this is like. All you've ever heard, young people, is the United States is in debt. You know, we were $10 trillion in debt, 50. So what? It doesn't mean anything. Well, how do you make that real? Well, let me try. Imagine taking out a credit card. You all know credit cards. So take out a credit card. It's got a spending cap on it of $10,000. Oh, great. I'm going to go spend $10,000. You go out and you charge $10,000 worth of clothes and TVs and computers and whatever else you want to buy, $10,000. Well, the bill's going to come one day, but you only pay the interest on that bill because Well, you can't afford even the minimum payment, so I'll just pay the interest. Well, because you're only going to pay the interest on this credit card that was advertised as a 4% interest rate, you didn't pay the payment, so because of that, you're considered in default. And now your interest rate is not 4%, it's more like 24%. No problem. Simply take out another credit card that has another $10,000 cap on it. Use that money to pay the interest on the first credit card. Plus, you go out and charge another $9,000. You got to leave $1,000 in reserve for paying that interest, right? You charge another $9,000 on that second credit card. You can't afford the payment on that. So on the second credit card, you only pay the interest on that. When you find you can't afford to do that, so you take out a third credit card for $10,000. And then a fourth. Suddenly you find yourself, I'm over $40,000 in debt. And that's just on the principal alone. The interest is going through the roof. Multiple thousands after that. Each of these cards is charging you over 20% interest. Meanwhile, all your income is from a part-time minimum wage job. Your debt is skyrocketing. There is no hope of ever paying off that debt. Welcome to the United States economy. That's pretty much where we are. Yeah, that's not going to keep going. That is unsustainable without some kind of a collapse or restructuring if we keep on spending like there's no tomorrow. Well, tomorrow is coming. But not for one part of the world. It's not going to be so global in its impact. Because as we've already indicated, at some point in the future, we can expect to see things make a complete reversal across the pond, over in Europe, Revelation 18. What can we expect to see in a revitalized Europe before the end of this age, before the return of Jesus Christ? We're going to see something a little bit after it's happened, after the fact, and then we'll deduce what has happened before. Revelation 18, verse 3. For all of the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. The merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Now, I don't have time to go to all the scriptures showing who this is, but this is talking about the coming beast power. This final, last revival of the Roman Empire with the combination of 10 kings that comes together to form a final, short-lived resurgence of the historic Fourth Empire of Daniel 7. Now, this coming European Union, with the blessings of the great church, will appear. They have solved everything. They figured out how to solve the problems of the world. But it's likely at the expense of other nations. Could we say United States and Great Britain, who are prophesied, we see, to implode unsustainable debt. Europe appears to be there to pick up the pieces as they help establish what we call a new world order. Much of the world will then desire to come into a trading partnership with this new power that's come on the scene from out of nowhere. Oh, we are not doing business anymore with our former business partner. How about now we do business here because they seem to have it all together? Let's notice a description of this power, Daniel 8. Daniel 8, verse 23. In the latter times of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness. When is that talking about? Is that, you hear the symbolic language there? In the latter time, when the transgressors have reached their fullness. I wonder if that's talking about us. But in that time, a king shall arise, having fierce features, beast power, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Oh, I wonder where he's getting power. Well, we know, we've already read it. It's the adversary, right? He shall destroy fearfully. So what power would destroy fearfully? He shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty. Who does he turn against? Who is he attacking? Who's he bringing into captivity? Again, a reference, I think, to Western nations, United States. And also, he shall destroy the holy people. What's prophesied to come? And who's going to do that? the martyrdom to come, a persecution of the saints. He will destroy the holy people. Verse 25. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. What's he saying? He's all about deception. Lying signs, mighty wonders, you know, lying wonders. He shall exalt himself in his heart. What did he say? How does he exalt himself? I'm God. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the Prince of Princes. Capital P. Speaking, I believe, of the final an attack, a convergence of attacks, the second and third woe against Jesus Christ. But, here's the end result. He shall be broken without human means. This power comes to its crashing end by none other than the Prince of Princes, Jesus Christ. So a very short time, this power, this union of 10 kings, will seem miraculous, but it will come crashing down. 1 hour, it says. Revelation 18. Revelation 18, verse 11. Again, we're going to look. This is the afterthought. This is describing after the destruction has taken place. Now we're looking back at what was going on. We thought this was going to solve everything. How long does it take for this power to establish what it does? Evidently not very long. But then also it comes crashing down. The merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Then it describes what the merchandise was that they had, that this great power had. And it mentions gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, linens, purple, silk, scarlet, wood. It goes on. You can read it there. Cinnamon, incense, frankincense, wine, oil, flour, wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, and the bodies and souls of men. They don't care who they crush, how they get their power. The fruit, verse 14. We're in Revelation 18, now verse 14. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you. And all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you. You will find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who became rich by her now stand at a distance for fear of her torment. What is it that they can't even come close to anymore? Weeping, wailing, and saying, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour, such great riches have come to nothing. Completely obliterated. This beast power will be extremely powerful during the Great Tribulation, but will be destroyed by events following in the day of the Lord. Last thing we'll look at, animal sacrifices to start in Jerusalem, the establishment of the abomination of desolation. Now, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of thought about this. I will simply sum it up by reading what we write in Life Hope and Truth about this. I can't say it any better than what has been written for us about these two things. It says, quote, in reference to the end of the age, when he would return to earth a second time, Jesus said in Matthew 24, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then, at that time, this is a time of fleeing. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. It's a sign, a signal. And Daniel was told in a vision that the words he had been given were sealed until the time of the end, and that from the time the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1290 days. The countdown of days presumed to be until the time of Christ's return. So here we see yet a future fulfillment of the abomination of desolation yet to occur. We remember that there was one in the past. I don't remember what year it was, but the story about Antiochus Epiphanes, or if you went to FI and listened to Mr. Johnson's classes, Antiochus Epiphanes. We should also note, it says, that the preceding verse, which mentions this, by the way, that's an incredible story to read. If you go back in history and read what happened when the abomination of desolation was set up in Antiochus Epiphanes, it was a time of intense cruelty and martyrdom. We should also note that the preceding verse, which mentions this abomination of desolation being set up, also states that the daily sacrifices must be taken away. Since the Jews are not currently offering any daily sacrifices, this means they must be reestablished. For sacrifices to be offered, an altar must be constructed. You can go on templeinstitute.org and you can look at all the work that's currently being done. There's progress being made all the time towards this end. They are ready and willing to do this just when the time is right. And I think sometime God's going to allow this. What this end time fulfillment of the abomination that makes desolate will be has not been revealed. But it says the wise will understand when it is established. We're not told how long the offerings continue, but at some point they have to be stopped. Based on the historical pattern that we've seen, something abominable will take place on that site. You know, we'll just have to wait and see what that is. But again, that's the signal. That's the time. You know, when we look at that, that's a time when it's time to pack things up. You know, we're done. It's the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the signal for that. And the church is going to be taken to a place of safety. We'll get into that in a little bit. Revelation 12, verse 6, let's just review the promise that God is going to take His church to a place of safety in final training, or final preparation. You know, that's not our goal, but we believe that many are going to be spared what is to come, and there will be a special reason and a lot of work to be done. During this time, it is a time not just to be safe, but it is a time of learning and training and preparation. But as it happens, Revelation 12, verse 6, again, it's symbolic language, the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God. We don't have to worry about preparing it, okay? It will be prepared by God that they should feed her, again, 1260 days. Verse 13. This is pretty amazing. When the dragon, again, Satan the devil, saw he had been cast to the earth. When has that happened? Again, we don't know that. Apparently not, because at the time this happens, he becomes extremely angry. And he and the persecution is launched into high gear. Well, we'll see when that happens. But it says he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Reference to Christ. But in verse 14, the woman, given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. Again, symbolic. We're not going to get on some big eagle, okay? Where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time. Again, prophetic, 3.5 years. From the presence of the serpent. He can't get at us at this place. But he's going to try one last time. Verse 15, the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helps the woman, and the earth opened its mouth, swallows up the flood that the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. That's pretty amazing. Now, that's symbolic language, but that indicates that as the church is moving towards this special place, Satan the devil is going to cause some force, maybe a military force, to come against us in an attempt to prevent us from leaving or entering this special location, wherever it is. And I think it appears that it's going to look like we're going to face certain death. It reminds me of the time of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. You know, Moses, you've led us out here to die. You're trapped between the mountains, and there's Pharaoh's army, and all we got left is the sea. We're going to die. And the unexpected happens. And I think we can expect the unexpected in our deliverance this way. This description of the earth opening up like a flood. There are other places that mention that the church will be taken to a place of safety. For your reference, Psalm 27, verse 5. In the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret place of his tabernacle, he shall hide me and set me high upon a rock. Psalm 31, verse 20. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of man. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion or shelter. Again, there are other places, but the important thing to remember is this is not our goal. If only I can make it to a place of safety, then everything will be fine. It's spiritual growth. It's always our goal. Those who seek to save their lives, if I can only figure out a way to get there, you won't get there in the first place. So it's spiritual preparation, not physical preparation. All right, in our next and final sermon in this series, we'll review events that we can expect to see happen as the Great Tribulation is getting underway, and we'll take it through the Day of the Lord up until the actual moment of the sounding of the seventh trumpet.